Hi guys, I'm Hannah.
And I'm Colleen.
And we combined have lived in Iraq for
11 years.
We get a lot of questions about life in Iraq, and we decided that the best way to address those questions is to do a little podcast. So we're going to answer some questions that are really common.
The ones that get asked all the time.
Yeah, because apparently it's a weird thing living in Iraq. Who knew?
So strange.
So today we're going to talk about food.
Food's good.
It's true. We like food, and especially at this time of year when it's like, eat all of the food.
Eat all the food.
Yeah. The worst time to go on a diet is like right now. So there are some things that are different about food in Iraq, but there are a lot of things that are very similar too.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I think one of the things that was the biggest adjustment for me is what I like to call the endless shopping quest.
Because it is a quest. It's like a scavenger hunt or a mystery adventure.
It is, and I feel like there are little people that pop up along the way that help you. It's great. It's fun.
Who needs games?
It's true. I do feel like I played a lot fewer games because so much more of my life was challenging.
There you go.
But as you may know or may not know, there really is not Walmart in Iraq.
Mm-mm.
There's not really even like the grocery store.
Yeah, there got to be some, but still, they don't quite carry all the things.
Yeah, it's true. And most of your shopping is done in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. In my experience, mm-hmm. I could do almost all of my shopping in my neighborhood, with a few exceptions.
So yeah, you visit the butcher for your meat, and you visit the produce stand for your produce, and the little guy who's got a hole in the wall for your dairy,
and the bakery for fresh baked bread, which is just amazing and super cheap.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the staple food in Iraq is bread, which is a little strange. I don't think most people think of Iraq and bread as like...
But you can't have a meal without bread.
It's true. It's true. The two things that are required for a meal are bread and rice. I've also had somebody tell me if there was no rice, it does not count as a meal.
Huh.
So.
Yeah.
So both of those things are really common in Iraqi food. And we'll get to some more common Iraqi food. But before we get there, what are some particular foods that you feel like you are always looking for? Or that were just difficult to find, even if not for you?
Well, I mean, the ones that were really common in the international community were things like Dr. Pepper.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can really usually find that. Sometimes good cheese.
Oh,
although
yeah.
You guys had good cheese in your city. But we didn't. And then the other one that's really common that really isn't one of the ones I ever looked for was peanut butter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not a big peanut butter fan either.
But, like, the idea that you couldn't find peanut butter was, like, really distressing to some Americans especially.
Mm-hmm.
That did change shortly after there was a recall on a brand of peanut butter in the U.S.
Oh, no.
There ended up being a lot of peanut butter in Iraq and of that brand. And
so lots of peanut butter, but also possibly Listeria?
Yeah, something like that.
All right. Well, I mean, fair trade, I guess.
I don't know.
I don't know either. And Kurtz really didn't like peanut butter in my experience.
I didn't know many that did either.
Like even peanut butter cookies, they were just kind of like, this is weird and we don't like it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The other thing we were always looking for a while there, was butter.
Yes. Yeah.
Our,
I remember those days.
The guy up in Denmark had done some... A cartoonist had done some cartoon that made everybody mad, and so they had stopped importing butter, and that was the only place they imported butter from was Denmark.
Denmark.
Really great butter. But it meant that we had to buy our butter on the black market for a while.
Black market butter.
Because he, you know, wasn't supposed to be importing it or selling it, so you had to walk up to him and ask him, so, do you have any butter today? And he would look around and then, from under the counter, he would pull out some butter and stick it in one of those little black plastic bags that they use to, you know, hide things and put unmentionables.
So, well, and it's a black market, so of course it's got to go in a black bag. Because that's how the black market works, right?
That's why it's called the black market.
Wow. I remember the butter shortage days. In the bigger city that I was in, you could occasionally find butter from New Zealand.
Oh.
Which I thought was really interesting.
Nice.
And not a dig at New Zealand, but the Danish butter was so much better. I don't know if they just, like, put more fat in it or what, but it
like we're really in some good. Sort of Dr. Seuss better yes. butter battle. Yes.
It is a better butter battle. But because of that very traumatizing experience in my life of the butter shortage, whenever I did find butter after that, I would just buy, like, multiple pounds of it and, like, keep it in the freezer, which really, I think, gave me a terrible reputation with my neighborhood shopkeeper, because I would just go in there, and if he had butter, I would just buy, like, all of it.
He's like, now nobody gets butter.
Yeah, and perhaps in hindsight, it was slightly selfish, but you know what? Sometimes you just need chocolate chip cookies, and it's really hard to do chocolate chip cookies without butter.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like I was using the butter best. I was the best butter user. Best better butter user?
Yes. Right. Right.
Say that 10 times fast. I feel like the other thing that was nearly always a quest, and maybe this was just my personal struggle, was for good chocolate. I feel like most other places that I've traveled have some form of European chocolate that's usually pretty tasty and, like, does not make me wish I was back in America. But for whatever reason, I feel like the Kurds just got, like, really cheap chocolate because they were more about, like, sugar content than actual, like, cocoa content, which is a big deal, okay, you non-chocolate eaters out there. Cocoa content is important. So I finally did find... you could get, like, Ghirardelli and Lindt, but it was really, really expensive. So I finally did find a Turkish brand of candy bar that was, like, it was so good. It's called Kerem Gourmet, and you could only find it in, like, certain shops during certain times of the year. And so it was another thing that whenever I found it, I would buy, like, a box of it. Because, oh man, it was just so good. And every time anyone has been back to Iraq, I have sent them with a picture of this candy bar and been like, look, this is all I want. I don't need you to bring me anything else. Just find this and bring me as many as you can fit in your suitcase.
Because
it's still, like, my favorite candy bar. But no one can find it. Apparently, it does no longer exist. Does not any longer exist.
It just doesn't exist.
It's not around. And that makes me sad.
Mm-hmm. But that covers most of the foods we would look for. I mean, there are plenty of things we missed that we knew we couldn't get at all. But
yeah.
Kurdish food...
Yes.
...is what we ate... Anytime we went to somebody else's house or out at a restaurant mostly. And it is not made of any of those ingredients that we talked about looking for.
It's true, which is probably why it was hard to find them.
Yeah. The things that are most common, she mentioned bread and rice, but chicken, beans, things cooked in tomato sauce or tomato paste and water and salt.
Mm-hmm. A lot of oil. They did do a lot of, like, fresh greens.
Mm-hmm.
Cucumber, tomato salad.
Lemon.
We had a lot of, like, chopped cabbage salad.
Oh.
With, like, lemon and pomegranate on it.
I didn't get that very much.
I felt like that was really, really common in the city I lived in.
Hmm.
But by far, the favorite Kurdish food that every Kurdish person will ask you if you have had is dolma.
Yeah.
And I happen to really enjoy dolma.
I'm glad for you.
So dolma kind of comes in two basic forms.
Mm-hmm.
One is rolled stuffed grape leaves, which I gotta say I'm not a huge fan of. And the other is like stuffed vegetables. So it's like onions or green peppers or tomatoes or eggplant. They hollow out and stuff with rice and meat.
That one is better.
That one, it just is. It just is.
Mm-hmm.
You
made dolma once, didn't you?
I tried to make dolma. It's really hard to do. Like, it is a skill. And so I had a Kurdish friend that invited me over to learn how to make dolma per my request. And I'm sitting there trying to like get the ratio of like stuffing to leaf right, because if you overstuff it, the leaf breaks. And if you understuff it, it's just all leaf and it's no good. And then you have to like fold it precisely and roll it up. And they make these like tight little like rice cigars almost is what they look like short cigars of rice and grape leaf. And mine always ended up coming out like really wonky looking or like with holes in them, or I didn't seal them up tight enough. So the lady that was helping us learn just like gave me the hardest time about it and told me that like, How could I call myself a woman if I couldn't even make dolma? Everyone knows how to make dolma from their childhood. Like, it was just the ugliest dolma that she had ever seen. The best she could say about it was that it was delicious, and that was because she had put all the spices in it. And I was like, oh no, I'm a terrible person. And my friend that was like invited me, she was like, no, women, no. We don't all know how to make dolma from birth. Like, you're not really as bad as she's making it sound. She's just trying to shame you so that you do a better job. I was like, that is not how my brain works. So anyway, it was still good.
Yeah.
And I never, ever told anyone that I was the world's worst dolma maker.
Mm.
I thought I would carry that private shame with me to my grave. Until I moved into a different city and went to work. First day, I went to talk to the accountant to make sure that I would get paid correctly. And I walk in and he was like, oh, Miss Hannah, hello, nice to meet you. I hear you make ugly dolma. And I was just like, how did you find out about this? I will never escape from this shame. And it turns out that like he was cousins with the lady that was helping us make it. So he heard like the worst story.
Yeah. And shared it with everybody in the other city. With
everyone in the other city. Because I definitely had other people that would be like, here you like dolma. And I was just like, I can never escape.
But you're right. Dolma is the favorite food of all women.
Yes.
But the man's food is something called serupe in my area, but in your area it's called
pacha.
Serupe literally means head and foot.
So you know where this is going.
And this is a food that neither Hannah nor I ever had to eat.
Woohoo!
Because men would go out and eat it at like 3 o'clock in the morning, and mm-hmm. like women don't go out at night like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We're okay with that, actually.
Yeah. I feel like it was a very manly, like, go build a campfire and make serupe kind of thing.
Yeah.
So explain what serupe is. Because I don't know that I even ever saw it.
I did see it. It's everything soup. Like, they put the whole sheep in there.
Everything.
I mean, maybe excepting the skin and the fur.
Yes.
Wool, hair, whatever. So, like, the whole head and face, the eyeballs, the internal organs, the
fat.
Lots of fat.
Yeah.
And, like, they just boil it all.
Yum. Doesn't that sound delicious?
And, like, the delicacies are like the pieces of muscle off the face and like
the big fat chunks.
The big fat. Ugh. Blah.
Yeah.
Sheep fat is not my favorite.
I was hungry when we were talking about dolma, but I do have to say that pacha. And I will also say that my Kurdish friends knew that like I would be grossed out by pacha, And so it was another thing that they would be like, hey, you want some pacho? Yeah. And I would always be like, no.
No.
I'm not a man. Give me dolma.
Give me dolma. That's true. It's true.
Yeah. And I feel like there were some other foods that, for the most part, Kurds knew that, like, Americans probably wouldn't really like.
Mm-hmm.
The prime example being masa'au.
Yeah.
Which is, like, yogurt and water drink. And it's really sour. And it tastes like sheep. And yeah. Not, like, yummy sheep.
Like barn sheep.
Like barnyard. Yeah. It's a little barnyardy. Because the best masa'au, according to the very heated debate in my fourth grade class,
yes,
comes from fresh yogurt and spring water, and you put salt in it.
Oh.
So you get this, like, sour, salty, which I feel like is the flavor profile of the Kurds, at least, is kind of, they like the sour and salty combination,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which was hard for me to get into sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, pick one. I can do salty or I can do sour, but the combination, like, sometimes was just
salty
a little...
pickles and mm-hmm. and salt sour candy and mm-hmm.
yeah, and even dolma kind of has that salty sour
mm-hmm. lemon juice in
yeah.
it.
But I think my favorite Kurdish food, maybe a fair tie with dolma, is.
Biryani?
Biryani.
Because totally that one's the best.
Biryani is the best.
No tie with dolma. No, not even close.
And it's not like Indian biryani. It has its own kind of
spices and
flavor and
almonds
things that you put
and
into.
Pasta and chicken
yeah.
and...
Yeah. I was...
yellow raisins.
Mm-hmm. I would frequently tell my students that, like, anytime they wanted to bring me their mother's biryani, I would happily eat it. and I had a couple students that took me up on it from time to time. It was a happy thing for me.
Yeah. But Kurdish food isn't the only food that we could get.
There is
some Western food.
Yeah.
I mean, besides the things that we made.
Yeah. Yeah, there were some Western-style restaurants or restaurants that had Western-style food.
What was your favorite?
My favorite was this pizza place in the second city I lived in called Pizza Hot.
Pizza Hot?
Pizza Hot. Which was both descriptive and maybe a ripoff of Pizza Hut. I'm not sure.
Probably.
But you could get pizza, salad, and soup for like $5
nice.
And Coke.
Uh-huh. Of course.
And it was like a personal sized pizza. It was definitely enough for a meal. Maybe even a meal and a half. But it was just good. And I think the reason I liked it is that there wasn't a lot of sauce on it. I don't like tomato sauce to begin with.
Add the ketchup and the mayonnaise like all the Kurds do with their pizza.
So basically it was just cheese and bread.
Huh.
With a little bit of like tomato. I think they put like tomato paste on it.
Uh-huh.
But man. That was like our weekend food.
Mm.
Be like, we're going to, because it was like 2 minute walk from our house. So we would just like walk to the corner and be like, look, we just need pizza. And yeah, they were nice. Awesome. And it was like family friendly. Yeah, it was great.
Mm.
So good. Yum.
My favorite is when American foods got brought over as in their name. Just like,
mm-hmm.
Often on menus there, you'd find Kentucky, mm-hmm. like K-E-N space T-A-C-K-Y, if they had like a spell checker,
uh-huh.
or, you know, K-E-N-T-A-K-I. And at first I was like, what is this? What's Kentucky? Kentucky? And they're like, oh, it is chicken. And it's fried chicken. Like
KFC.
Kentucky
fried chicken.
But just... Kentucky.
That is much more convenient.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of makes sense to me.
It does make sense.
I'm just going to start calling all fried chicken Kentucky.
Kentucky.
I think that'd be fair. My other favorite is finger chips.
Mm.
That often got shortened to just fingers.
Fingers. Would you like some fingers?
No, I mean just my own. But those are French fries.
Yes.
And I know where the chips thing came from, that British influence of chips. I'm not sure where fingers came from.
My favorite were the finger sandwiches.
Finger. Finger sandwiches?
Well, they would make the sandwiches in the cafeteria with the bread and the finger chips, the french fries on it. And those french fry sandwiches. That was it. Yeah.
That sounds like carbohydrate heaven right there. Bread.
It was the favorite.
And fried potatoes. Yeah. I mean, of course it is. Of course it's the favorite.
I never personally went for it, but the kids loved it.
Yeah. We also had a restaurant in our neighborhood that was Kurdish, and they made wood-fired chicken. So they would take a chicken and, like, slice it and flatten it out. So it was still whole, but just flat. And they would put, like, sumac on it and lemon juice. So, again, with the sour-salty kind of thing. And then they would kind of, like, rotisserie cook it over wood fire. And it was, like, the juiciest chicken I have ever had in my life. It had that, like, tangy sourness from the sumac and the lemon. Ugh, and the smoky flavor. It's making me, like, drool is coming out of my mouth almost. It is so good. That was another thing that, like, if I had had a long day, I would go up and get a chicken. And so they would just, like, wrap it in aluminum foil and then wrap it in big, flat pieces of naan bread. And so we would bring it home. Awesome.
I had some one time when I visited you, and I found it really wonderful, although I do believe I used some silverware.
It's true. Most people are a little more civilized than I was at that point. The other thing we really enjoyed is cooking with students, or even just cooking for students.
Mm-hmm. They had as much curiosity about our food and what we eat as we, or, you know, anyone here has curiosity about their food and what they eat. So,
yeah, and so sometimes they would request things that maybe they had heard about. I had some students request, I thought they were requesting macaroons, but they were actually requesting macarons, however you say, the, like, little almond paste cookies.
Oh.
So I made coconut macaroons, and I was like, here you go. And they were like, this is different. yeah.
He's like, you gotta pronounce the word just right.
It's true. Plus, I'm pretty sure I could not have pulled off macarons in Kurdistan. I don't think I could pull them off in America, honestly.
I remember making cookies, sugar cookies, and chocolate chip cookies were a huge favorite among the kids. Sugar cookies we would make for Valentine's Day, and we'd make them at Christmas and invite people over to decorate them. One year, though, I made mint frosting for my sugar cookies, which I love.
Yeah.
And the kids were all like, Miss, these cookies taste like toothpaste. They didn't really like them.
I could see that. I could see the mint thing being a little weird. Again, because I feel like in Kurdistan it's more of a savory thing than a sweet thing.
Yeah, they don't really do mint flavored anything.
No. I had students ask me to make them bean dip once. I'm not sure how they knew about it, but they did. So I bought dried black beans and soaked them and cooked them and then, like, smashed them. I think I had salsa. I had managed to find salsa, and so I added that. And my roommate made pico de gallo, and we found Tostito chips, which is, like, a big deal. It's really hard to find just plain corn chips. You can get, like, Doritos, but just salted corn chips are a little rarity. And I didn't make it too spicy. Like, to me, it tasted really boring, but they really loved it. Like, they ate all of it. Nice. And I was so proud of them because I was like, bean dip is a weird food. Like, it's a weird texture and it's kind of a weird flavor. But they ate it all. I was so proud. I also made them eggnog. which is another really weird American food. And I mean, I made it alcohol free because they're underage and, you know, the Middle East, no alcohol. But eggs and milk and vanilla and some sugar and some nutmeg mixed together and drunk cold is a weird thing.
It is.
It's a weird thing, America. Why do we drink that?
But I mean, in some ways, it's not that different from something like mezcal. I mean, yeah, that's a weird thing, too.
I guess so.
We all have our weird things.
It's true. It's true that we do. And, you know, we just have to embrace them. We really have to just go for it and be like, this is the thing that is weird about me. Mm. I drink eggs and milk.
Or not.
Only at Christmas. It's well, so strange.
There we go.
Oh my goodness. If you have any strange stories or want to ask us any strange questions, please feel free to do so. What's the best way for them to do that?
To either contact us on Facebook, Servant Group International, or you can contact us on Instagram, also Servant Group International, or you can find us on our website at servantgroup.org.
Yeah, so we're easy to find as long as you know how to spell the words Servant Group and International. You should be able to find us just about anywhere. Get in touch. Let us know what you think. Let us know what questions you have. We are happy to answer the questions of our audience.
Yeah.
But until the next time, we hope that you have a weird and wonderful week.